well in your beds.
Because if this thing comes true, there ain't gonna be any more.
It's an elevator. Somebody sent those deads up here to get us. Now, there's no controls inside, but there's maintenance overrides in there.
You were. I was wrong. We were so wrong. We must leave.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the US of A, and with me in the state of Massachusetts.
Hey everyone, this is Abe.
Abe, how's it going, sir?
I'm doing all right.
Excellent. You sound a little better there. We do have a Connecticut American.
This is Chrissy.
Chrissy, how are you?
I am terrific. Thank you. I'm a little buried, but I'm good.
Nice. Buried figuratively, not with snow.
Figuratively buried. My literary magazine is going amazingly well. I'm getting a lot of good submissions, but it is a lot of reading and a lot of work. So, yeah.
All right, and we'll talk about that at the end of this episode where you can plug that. But before we begin, what is Dark Discussions? For those who are new to the podcast, Dark Discussions is a podcast where we talk about horror, sci-fi, fantasy, thrillers, techno thrillers, mystery, grindhouse, art house, midnight movies, cult films, and whatnot. And we basically try to critique and review them. And so basically talk intelligently about a genre that deserves intelligence. The website is darkdiscussions.com. The email is darkdiscussions@aol.com. The Facebook group is Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group, where we have close to 800 participants, where we're discussing all sorts of things. Right now there's a lot of discussion on Color Out of Space that just came out or is about to come out. Talking about various new TV shows that are coming out. The Oscars being talked about with the Joker getting a number of 11 nominations and a bunch of other topics as well. So come and join us there at Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group. If you send us an email at darkdiscussions@aol.com, we will read it on the podcast. We do have a couple of emails that we are going to read probably within the week or two and so forth. And then we have a Patreon where you can donate to the podcast. So it's patreon.com/darkdiscussions. And if you donate to the podcast, for every $5 you donate per month, you get a chance for us to do a topic. So, for example, if you donate $15, you could choose three different films, such as Friday the 13th, Halloween, or Night of the Living Dead, or you could just go Night of the Living Dead times three, and all those will be dropped into a figurative hat where every quarter we pull randomly one item from that figurative hat, and then we do an episode on a topic. So, and if you do donate, you have your topic choices in the pool forever until they're picked. So that always is good too. So let's see. Tonight is a special episode. Chrissy, what is this episode? We've done this a couple of times, pretty much every year.
We are going to be talking about what each of us is looking forward to seeing in 2020 in terms of the horror genre or the speculative genre, the movies we are most looking forward to.
Excellent. And this is 2020 that we're going to be discussing. Right now we are recording on January 23rd, 2020. So obviously we're probably going to skip over January stuff since that's already come out, even though not much has come out. It's similar to last year where it's been pretty slow. But there's a whole lot of films in sci-fi, horror, fantasy, thrillers, and a bunch of other films that are of interest, and we're going to basically do a round table where each of us will pick a film that we're looking forward to, give some details about it, maybe discuss it with the three of us here. Co-host Mike is supposed to join us, but we're unable to get a hold of him at the moment, and co-host Eric was unable to join us tonight. But if Mike can't join us, we still get the three of us, and we both, or I should say the three of us, all have long lists of stuff that are available of interest that may be interesting to you, the listener. All right, so I guess we can go around, and we can do alphabetical order. At the end, we'll have some house cleaning stuff where Chrissy can talk about some of her exciting things that she's doing. And Abe, I know you usually have stuff about anime and video games and whatnot, and anything that we've watched recently that we want to talk about that may interest our listeners. But we can start alphabetical order, first name basis. So Abe, what's the first film that you want to mention that you're looking forward to in 2020?
Well, for me, it was kind of difficult because there's only so many films that I was actually really looking excited about for this year. But my number one, the one I'm most looking forward to, is Antlers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that one looked pretty cool. I think that's directed by the same guy that did Crazy Heart and
Black Mass and Hostiles.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So he's done he's done a lot of good films, and Hostiles was actually a film that me, Eric, and Mike did on the spinoff podcast, Cinema a la Carte, which is kind of interesting. Why don't you talk about this film a little bit?
So it's about a small town in which a young boy is harboring some horrifying secret, and his teacher and police officer are slowly uncovering the nightmarish reality that something hungry and otherworldly is about to be unleashed. And it's a monster movie, essentially. But it goes on to a very specific kind of monster, a kind of spirit that is pretty awesome. And that's the Wendigo.
I'm looking forward to this too because of its connection to the Wendigo legend. There have been a few movies around that try to use that, but this one looks like it actually might be interesting. I really haven't seen a Wendigo movie yet that's impressed me, ever. So I'm really hopeful for this one. Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, it looks really... I mean, this looks like it's one of pulling punches. I mean, it looks pretty grotesque. The creature, what it looks together, it looks really badass. And, you know, it should be at least a fun ride. I'm looking forward to it. This is the one that I've been really keeping my eye on for because it's... it just really grabbed me. And I guess we'll just go... it's coming out, I think, in April. If I'm correct...
It is. It's April 17th.
Okay. So it's not too far away. So that's definitely one for the other episode. Stay tuned for more. Hopefully it doesn't end up being in a gallows or anything like that to where we have to skip over it. But I'm excited for it. And that's one of my films so far.
Well, some other information on that film. One of the screenwriters besides Scott Cooper is Nick Antosca, who was the creator and showrunner for the horror TV show Channel Zero, which a lot of people enjoyed when it was out on the Sci-Fi Network. You can find those now on like VOD on like Netflix and whatnot, or maybe Amazon Prime. Stars Kerry Russell as the big name, obviously, since it's Wendigo's involved. Graham Greene has a role in it, and Graham Greene is a Native American actor, and Wendigo is part of that mythos of the Native American folk. The film is actually being released by Searchlight Pictures, which is was known until a couple of days ago as Fox Searchlight Pictures, but Disney is now dropping the Fox name from 20th Century Fox and Fox Searchlight because they do not own the news station. So they get letting the name go to the news station, and they're just going to keep Searchlight and 20th Century. And it's also produced by Guillermo del Toro, one of the producers. You going to say something?
Yeah, it's also based on a short story called The Quiet Boy by someone named Nick Antosca. I'm really curious about that. I look into that.
Well, Nick Antosca is the guy that I was just mentioning, Abe, the guy that was the showrunner for Channel Zero from Sci-Fi Network.
Oh, yeah. I would just say that this is actually not something that's come – it has some kind of foundation in terms of where the film is built on.
Right. Well, he it's his story. You're right. And he's adapted. He's one of the adaptions to screenwriting is by him as well. Anything else anybody wanted to bring up about this one here?
A bit spooky.
All right. Sounds good. So yeah, that's a highly anticipated one. And Scott Cooper is a Oscar nominated director. For Crazy Heart, as a matter of fact. Let's see. Rephrase that. He didn't necessarily get a nomination, but it got nominations, and it did win Best Actor, Jeff Bridges, back in the day. All right, so let's go to the next film, and that's to you, Chrissy.
Well, actually, I know we said we were not doing January films, but I have been looking forward to a film called The Turning, which is going to be released tomorrow. It's basically a much scarier adaptation of The Turn of the Screw, which is where, you know, if any of you listeners out there have seen the movie The Innocents, starring Deborah Carr, that's basically also an adaptation of Turn of the Screw, where you have a nanny, you know, who goes to this manor house to, you know, school these children, teach these children. And it's all about how she gets sucked up into this basically ghost story, because the place is haunted. When I first saw the trailer, I was like, okay, this looks right up my alley. It's probably going to be pretty standard, you know, tropey ghost story stuff. But then I did some more reading about it and found out that it is considered an adaptation of Turn of the Screw. And that is one of my favorite pieces of literature of all time. So I was like, well, you know what? It'll be so interesting to see what they did with this. The Turn of the Screw is a novella that was written by Henry James in the late 1800s. I want to say like right before 1900, like 1898 or something like that, or 1899, somewhere in there. And it was originally run as a serial in a magazine called Collier's Weekly. And then later on, it was published in a book by Macmillan in New York City. But it is considered a very classic ghost story in the most classic of senses. So I think I'm going to see, I don't know if the script is going to be, I have no idea what it's going to be, but I'm really looking forward to it, and I'm hoping I can get out to see it.
Yeah, some background about it. Floria Sigismondi is director. She's a Italian director, and she actually is probably best known for The Runaways, which was a movie that came out a couple of years ago that was based off of the band, a biopic of the band The Runaways, and that was a pretty good film. It's co-written by Carrie and Chad Hayes, who wrote The Conjuring. It stars Mackenzie Davis, who was probably best known recently anyway from the Terminator Dark Fate that just came out, I think in November of last year. She was the lead in that, or one of the leads in that. The film, as you said, is coming out tomorrow. So technically, it's probably has the Thursday night viewings right now. But it is getting mediocre reviews at the moment. It seems that it's getting 29% good reviews. So I'm not sure what that means, but we'll have to see. You'll have to let us know, Chrissy, since you said you're going to see it, right?
Yes, I'm going to see it. I guess I'm going to try to plan to see it this weekend, because the other January one, let me get this out of the way since we said no January, is The Color Out of Space, which is based on the H.P. Lovecraft story of the same name and stars Nicolas Cage. And that also gets released this weekend. And so I'm going to see that the weekend of January 31st, if I can find a theater that's playing it. But I'm going to try to get to the Turning this weekend if I can. I have a lot going on at home, but I'm going to definitely try to get there.
All right, very well. Abe, any comments on this one here, The Turning?
I saw the trailer for it, but I'm kind of cautiously interested in it. I mean, even despite the reviews, it could actually still be enjoyable. But yeah, I'll wait a word from Chrissy and see if it's going to be a dumpster fire or not.
All right, very well. All right, so that's The Turning, and that comes out January 24th, technically. So, very well. All right, so now it's me, and the first film I'm going to bring up is Wonder Woman, 1984. I really enjoyed the first film, the Wonder Woman film that came out a couple years ago, starring Gal Gadot. This is supposed to be a direct sequel by the same director and the same cast. And it moves the story up about 40 years or so to 1984. There's been some trailers that have come out that show a little bit. They're almost like teaser trailers. And for a wiki or IMDb for the film, it simply says in 1984, Diana Prince, who is the alter ego of Wonder Woman, comes into conflict with two formidable foes, Maxwell Lord and the Cheetah, while reuniting with her past love, Steve Trevor. So we have two, I guess, supervillains, which I'm not too familiar with either of them. I haven't followed the Wonder Woman comic book for a number of years, but I know that there a lot of people are excited about those villains. And then it'll be curious to see how they bring the Steve Trevor character back, because it seemed that he had died in the original film that came out a couple of years ago. But my guess is they're going to probably have some sort of time warp or something, because he died in an airplane that blew up. So I bet there's going to be some sort of time trip thing that's going to happen. Any spoilers for that? Too bad. That was a 3-year-old film by now. So that's the first film I'm looking forward to. And it actually comes out on June 5th, and it will be released on IMAX as well. So folks who love the big screen will be able to see it there. Either you seen the trailers for this or have any interest in this?
I haven't seen the trailers for it, but I mean, the first one was pretty enjoyable, I've been kind of holding off on the superhero movies lately. Doesn't mean I won't go give it a shot, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah, no, it's not my thing. I saw the original, the first Wonder Woman that came out, and I watched it on TV, and I just really didn't care for it. Although I have to say, unfortunately, Nathan and I had a really good time making fun of it. but, you know, that's just us. We like to do that sometimes. But I understand that there's a lot of people that are into it. But in general, I'm not a big superhero movie person anyway, so it's not something that would really attract me. But I know that there are a lot of listeners who love that. So if you enjoyed the first one, I would say definitely go, you know. It's just a personal preference thing for me. It's got nothing to do with quality, really.
All right, very good. Good. All right, so I guess we're back to you. Hey, what do you got for your second film, show, or whatever that you wanted to let folks know about?
See, the next one will be... Okay, this one, I'm not... This is, could be a wild card, but it's the sequel to the Candyman. Yeah, so I guess Tony Todd will be reprising his role as the titular dark spirit. But it's kind of bare bones in terms of, like, certain details. It's got, like, writers, Jordan Peele's one of the writers. It's being directed by someone named Nia Da Costa, but I don't really know a whole lot about this individual. And the cast is kind of a little here and there. Maybe I've seen a few folks here and there. It could be awesome. Or it could be terrible. But I really did I do consider the Candyman film to be one of the stronger films of the 1980s era, especially in terms of slashers and stark thrillers. I don't think we ever did an episode on it either.
No, we have not.
No, but definitely. So this is why I'm kind of hoping that maybe, you know, this will kind of spark a little interest, and maybe at some point we'll check out the original.
Yeah. So what IMDb says: a spiritual sequel to the 1992 horror film Candyman that returns to the now gentrified Chicago neighborhood where the legend began. Nia Da Costa is the director. Hasn't done much really that I'm familiar with. And it's coming out June 12th by Universal, and it's based off of the characters by Clive Barker, obviously, even though he has no other participation in the film. What about you, Chrissy? Are you familiar with the Candyman film or any of its sequels, and any thoughts on this?
I saw the original Candyman, I want to say recently, within the last couple of years, because again, when those movies came out, I was not watching horror films. I enjoyed it. I certainly respect it as a classic, like Nightmare on Elm Street or, you know, any of those, Friday the 13th. It was really quite groundbreaking. And, you know, I certainly think that it's really at its heart, it's about a tragic love story. But this second thing just didn't interest me. I never saw any of the sequels, but I certainly think that it'll be interesting to see what they do with it. If we decide to do it for Dark Discussions, I'll totally go see it. But if we don't do it for Dark Discussions, I probably will just skip it, because I'll wait and catch it someday on, you know, Netflix or TV or whatever. It actually didn't make my list of things I wanted to see, but that's cool. That's why this is cool, because we all have a different list. So
sure. Yeah, for me, I've watched the original twice, and both times I enjoyed it, but it never blew me away either time, and I haven't seen any of the sequels. I'll probably be interested in seeing this, probably similar to Chrissy, because we'll probably do it as an episode just for the fact that it's an important horror character. So I'll probably see it just for that fact alone. We'll see as we get closer to the June 12th release date. All right, sounds good. All right, so Chrissy, what's your next genre, film or TV show, whatever that you wanted to mention?
Well, this might actually already be available on Netflix. I have not had a chance to check, but it's called Ghost Stories, and it is Well, it's India. It's from India, and it is on Netflix, or it's going to be. It might be already. It is subtitled, and it's an anthology film of four ghost stories. And it just looks, I saw the trailer, and it just looks really interesting. And for me, while everybody knows I'm a lover of ghost stories, I particularly love the ghost lore and the ghost stories that come out of India. There is something about those stories that is just so different and so unsettling, the way that, because their culture is so different from ours. So, but it's less harsh almost, because it's not like in Japan where everything scary is J-horror. The Indian ghost stories are much more subtle. They're much more creepy. Like that one, The Other Side of the Door, which was a movie that came out a few years ago, which was set in India, and was also kind of based on a few different Indian, like, you know, Indian ghost stories that, you know, in their lexicon, that their mythology, basically. And a lot of people didn't love that movie, but I thought what made it so special was just, I mean, India is a dark, it's like a dark continent. It's creepy as it is, and it's also very beautiful. So it has this very interesting contrast of death set against all of this lush, beautiful stuff. And so I'm very interested to see what this is all about. I did not read the summaries of each story because I honestly do not want to know. I just want to sit down and watch it. I don't want to know what happens, because a lot of times they give you a summary and then you know the whole story and then you don't want to watch it. So like I said, I know that's going to be on Netflix. It may already be there. I just have been so busy. I haven't even been able to check yet. And I think this weekend when I'm home, I'm probably just going to take a break and see if I can track it down. And if it's there, I'm definitely going to watch it.
All right. Abe, what about yourself? You said you heard something about this.
I definitely heard about it. And I think I caught a glimpse of something like that on Netflix, but I never got around to watching it. And so maybe it might be up right now. I'll have to check later on myself. So.
All right. Yeah. So, it is a Hindi language. So, as you said, Chrissy, so it's actually using the Hindi language, because, as a lot of folks may know, India has 16 official languages, but Hindi is the main one. It is now available on Netflix with subtitles. But
yes, yeah, it is. I just went and looked. It's there.
Yeah. But it may actually have one of those audio tracks that convert to English. I'm not sure. A lot of that Netflix stuff does that. The IMDb says the winning team of Lust Stories unite to tell some spine chilling tales. Ghost Stories is an upcoming, or already available now, 2020 Indian anthology horror film consisting of four short film segments directed by Karan Johar, Dikabar Banaji, Zoya Akhtar, and Anura Kashyap. It serves a sequel to the 2013 and 2018 films Bombay Talkies and Lust Stories, respectively. And each director that I name does their own story. So all four directors do each independently. It'll be curious to see if there's any wraparound tale, but it doesn't appear to be that's the case. And it is actually got average reviews, 2.5 or 3 stars out of 5 by Indian reviewers. So it's been getting mixed reviews, but it may be something of interest. Any other thoughts or comments on this film? Anyone?
I'm willing to give it a chance. I always loved horror films of all cultures, because they always have a different take on it. whether that's from Korea, India, Spanish language films. I mean, there's a lot. It's really interesting just how they the approaches varies, and so it's always very, very mysterious to us because it's very different from how we approach such genres. So right. You know, we'll see how I'll give it a shot every time I get a chance, and you know, it might actually still be fun besides the average reviews.
Yep. Very good. Very good. All right, so we'll move on. Now it's my turn to mention something, and I'm actually doing a television show that I'm interested in. Basically, it's called Devs, D-E-V-S. It comes out March 5th on Hulu, and I'm not a subscriber to Hulu, but I probably will for this because it's directed and written and created, produced and all that by Alex Garland. And for folks who don't know who Alex Garland is, he's the director of Annihilation and Ex Machina, and also the screenwriter for Dread, 28 Weeks Later, 28 Days Later, and Sunshine. Actually, 28 Weeks Later, he was really the executive producer, but he did write the screen plays for 28 Days Later, Sunshine, and Dread, never minding his breakout Ex Machina and his highly acclaimed Annihilation. So this here is a sci-fi series. They call it a quote-unquote mini-series, but it appears that there's going to be maybe a like it could be up to 10 episodes. So the question is, will it be a one and done season or will it continue after that? But basically this is what it says. It says Devs is centered around Lily Chan, played by Sonoya Mizuno, who was actually one of the lead actresses in Ex Machina. She is a computer engineer investigating a quantum computing company called Amaya, run by Forrest, played by Nick Offerman. She believes his company is responsible for the disappearance of her boyfriend. And so there's not much other details. So it's kind of been under wraps. But if folks are familiar with his work, and as I mentioned here, Ex Machina, Annihilation, Dread, Sunshine, 28 Days Later, those are all solid things, and besides 28 Days Later, though you could technically even throw that in, they all are science fiction-y, and with a lot of thriller, psychoanalysis type stuff, and even some horror elements in all those films. This is something I'm really looking forward to because everything this guy has touched, in my opinion, has turned to gold, including Annihilation, which these many years later, I've actually listed it as one of my top 10 favorite horror films of the 2010s, compared to my original review, which was a good film, but not awesome, though I've reevaluated it since. All right, so anybody hear about this series or anything about Alex Garland that you wanted to mention or anything generally about this series, I guess, yeah? Anything? Anyone?
No. I that's interesting because for some reason it wasn't anything I'd heard of, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah, same here.
All right, very well. So that's Devs coming out March 5th, I believe, is what I said. Yep, March 5th. And it will be a series on Hulu, science fiction series. So look out for that. All right, so we're now back to you, Abe.
All right, so next is one that I'm not sure if it will be coming out this year, but it sounds like it's slated for it. And that is Train to Busan 2.
Yes, it is coming out this year. The question is, will it make it to the States? But the release date is June or July. Continue, though. Yep.
But I really enjoyed the first one. I thought it was a solid zombie film. very visceral, very emotional, very entertaining throughout. It was great. It was fantastic. It was better than I expected it to be. And so hearing there's a sequel is kind of a little nervous because, you know, can Lightning strike twice? Can this really be up to par or be just still enjoyable? Or will this be, you know, trying to catch that same magic again, but not really do anything new or anything? I don't know. It's one I'm really interested in seeing when it comes out, but I have some cautious optimism with it. You know, fingers crossed.
Yeah. I'm kind of looking forward to this one too. I felt Train to Busan was one of the better zombie, never mind better horror films I've seen for a while. It's really, really top notch film. It has a great cast and it was kinetic and had scary moments and stress moments and all that you want to see in a horror film, even in a subgenre that a lot of people say has been overplayed. The director, who's well known for animation, as we know, has also now done live action. And Sang-ho Yeon is the director, and he is coming back to do this film as well. As I said, at least in the South Korea, it will be released in the middle or early summer. Whether it gets to the States or worldwide, we're not sure. I guess it probably will because of how well the first one did, but who knows? Chrissy, what about you? Have you seen the original and your thoughts on the zombie genre as well as a sequel to this film?
Well, I loved the original Train to Busan. I, like Abe, thought it was fresh. It was different. It was really well written. It held together. It was exciting. And I am not a zombie person, film, even though I still like The Walking Dead. I'm just kind of zombied out. And it's not something that normally appeals to me. You know, of course, I love 28 Days Later and, you know, all that stuff. But, you know, over time, there was just such an influx of it. It just stopped interesting me. I did not know that there was going to be a second installment of this. So that is kind of cool. I don't know how I missed it, but that's awesome. I'll put that on my list. I'll look forward to seeing it.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things was it's really difficult, I think, with zombie films, especially with it being overplayed, is that the human element sometimes gets forgotten. And I was really pleasantly surprised how they managed to keep that. In fact, the ending was probably the most emotionally gut-wrenching ending I've seen in a horror film recently.
Well, Abe, the thing that happens with zombie films is either they're too much zombies or too much human element, and that usually sucks, in my opinion. But Train to Busan, I think, mixed it perfectly because it had zombie action through and through. Yes, and then the human element didn't overshadow the zombie element and become a crappy soap opera. It actually became an actual story to tell, which I felt is what made this film really good. Yeah. The thing about what else I wanted to bring up about this here, Train to Busan. Oh yeah, when Dark Discussions actually had it as our top horror film of that year that it came out, 2016 I think it was, or 2017, and I think it beat out another great film, Autopsy of Jane Doe. So that was a pretty good year for horror. So yep, looking forward to it. All right, Chrissy, what do you got next?
Well, I do have a couple in February that I'll come back to, but I do want to mention this one because it sounds so unique and I'm so excited. It comes out March 6th. It's called Swallow, and it's a body horror movie, and it is about a woman who is a newlywed who, you know, maybe can't really handle her domestic, you know, lifestyle or whatever because it's thrust upon her, and she develops pica. So she starts eating things in order to cope with this stress. She starts eating batteries, thumbtacks. This is
what's pica? What's pica?
Pica is a disorder in which people eat things. They are driven and compelled to eat things that are not edible. So they eat things like thumbtacks, elastic bands, pencil erasers. Like, they actually eat them. And what the reason that I'm so fascinated with this is, for those of you who don't know, or those listeners who are new, or if I haven't mentioned in a while, I mean, I have an eating disorder too. I had anorexia, actually had bulimorexia. And these eating disorders in particular, whether it's bulimorexia, bulimia, anorexia, you know, the overeating disorder, which has a name that I forget, or pica or something similar, there is this crazy drive and this, like, it's almost like a split of your conscience. And it says, you're not allowed to have that, or you must eat this. It's like a compulsion. You can't stop yourself. And I have a cat who's now 18. His name is Poe. And he made it. He's still going strong, but he's getting old now. But when he was a kitten, and this is how I first learned about pica and that it could be present in human beings, he had pica. So he, and like, I would just, you know, cats eat things they're not supposed to eat sometimes. Yeah. No, this was like abnormal. Like, you know, you're sitting there eating your bowl of ice cream, and my cat would come up, Poe would come up, and he was a little kitten, and be like, oh, and he would ignore the ice cream, and he would just start eating, like, my pen, like, trying to eat my pen. I can't even tell you how many hundreds of elastic bands my cat ate. Like, we had to go through the whole house and lock up everything. Feathers, glass. He used to knock glasses on the floor and then eat the broken glass. Like, it was so screwed up. Like, wow. And I took him to the vet and they're like, oh, well, he has pica. It's really rare, but it happens in pets sometimes, and it happens in humans too. And most of the time in pets, they grow out of it. Well, by the time Poe was like 1 year old or 2 years old, he had pretty much stopped. He was back to just, oh, I want your ice cream, you know. And he's been normal ever since. But every once in a while, I'll catch him like trying to eat an eraser or something, and I'm like, oh dude, don't, please, we got you through your babyhood and you didn't die, can you please stop doing this? However, pica is also something that has developed also sometimes in pregnant women, because because their hormones are all out of whack. And I haven't done a lot of research on this, but I would guess that sort of like anorexia nervosa and some of these other compulsive eating disorders, what usually happens is it's like an Edgar Allan Poe thing, okay? You're like predisposed to it, like you already have the gene for it, and you may not develop it unless there are certain triggers present. And when I read the description of this movie, it sounded like a classic, like the woman just goes into a situation that she can't handle, and perhaps she was already predisposed to this, and she just goes downhill. So it looks fascinating, and I can't wait to see it. It's March
7th. Now, it's directed by Carlo Mirabella Davis. And that's his directorial debut. It actually premiered on the festival circuit, Tribeca Film Festival, last year at April 28th, and then was bought by IFC Film. So they have the right to it, which is owned by AMC. So it'll probably go straight to VOD. It's stars Haley Bennett, who actually back in 2016 looked like she was going to have a breakout to leading lady in like mainstream films, because she co-starred with Emily Blunt, Rebecca Ferguson, and Justin Theroux in The Girl on the Train, and she was really good in that. We probably know her, Chrissy and Abe, from doing that episode. Christy, remember that film that we did an episode on a couple of years ago?
Oh, yeah. She was the star of that, right?
Yeah, she was the star. Yeah. Of that. Yep.
I liked that movie. She
was
good.
Pretty solid. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's a really good actress. Really, really attractive woman too, so she has like a lot of charisma and all that. So that's a good lead, I think. And I had not heard of this film, but I'm actually really excited because after you talking about it, because Tribeca usually grabs some good films, and then IFC grabs good films too. And then, of course, I like Haley Bennett. So, yeah, looks pretty good.
Well, and that might make a good episode too, just because I've never seen a movie that addresses Pica. Like, this is going to be fascinating. Like, I'll have a ball with this episode. If we decide to do it as an episode, I'm sure I'm going to have a great time. So I'm sort of excited.
Abe, what about you? Any further comments you want to say, or you're all done?
For this one, not really.
Okay, sounds good. All right, so next one will be me, and this one is another TV show. This one is called Snowpiercer, based off of the movie Snowpiercer.
Oh, Snowpiercer is good.
Yep, it's going to premiere May 31st on TNT. So that's a regular cable network, which is owned by Warner Brothers. And this is what it says. It says, Snowpiercer is set 7 years after the world becomes a frozen wasteland and follows the remnants of humanity who inhabit a gigantic, perpetually moving train that circles the globe. The show questions class warfare, social injustice, and the politics of survival. The movie was an interesting film, science fiction film that was kind of more of a fable than science fiction as reality. And it appears that the show may be that way too. The thing that interested me mostly about the show is the lead, or at least the female lead of the show, is Jennifer Connelly. So that'll be really cool to see her weekly on a television show, since she's an Academy Award winning actress and pretty solid. Never mind. The rest of the cast I'm not really too familiar with, but the show is developed, or the showrunner is Josh Friedman, and Josh Friedman has worked on a lot of TV and stuff in the past, including the Lena Headey television show, The Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles, that played out for a season or two before it failed. But he's dabbled in a lot of screenwriting. He's writing like the screenplay for Avatar 2. Was the story writer for Terminator Dark Fate that just came out. He was the screenwriter for Steven Spielberg's War of the Worlds that came out back in 2005, starring Tom Cruise. He's been obviously the creator for this. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. I remember when Mike mentioned it once, as you know, news in one of our prior episodes. He felt it was kind of bizarre because it's not a well-known film in the mainstream, and it's a strange story, never mind. But someone thought it would be good enough to make a series out of and possibly extend that universe. So I'm kind of looking forward to it. What about you, Abe, especially since I know you're into South Korean films too, and that was a South Korean film originally.
Snowpiercer
was a South
Korean film. That's right. It was. That's right. There was several major. Yeah, that's okay.
The director that did Parasite, I think, is the director that did Snowpiercer.
I never got to see Parasite. I know people were talking like crazy about it, but I got around to seeing it. But no, I really enjoyed Snowpiercer a lot. It's going to be interesting to see how they could do a TV series, because, well, how far can they, prolong the storyline with, cause the first one was nice and tightly paced and just kind of moved from one thing to the other and was for the most part really satisfying, but I don't know. I mean, it could be interesting to expand on the world, the small world in this train and the dynamics. But on the other hand, it it feels like, is it supposed to be a prequel or is it supposed to be something else?
No one knows.
No one knows. So that's kind of going to be the catch there, too, because if it's a prequel, I'm coming feeling like, I don't know, because I always have that feeling with prequels. If it's something else, maybe a little different, then it could be cool. So I'll wait and see.
All right, sounds good. What about you, Chrissy? Any familiarity with Snowpiercer, the film, or this series? I know you're probably familiar with the director of the original Snowpiercer, who is Jun Ho Bong, who directed The Host, as well as the fabulously well-received Parasite that just came out, and then the Netflix film Okja that came out a couple of years ago. Any comments?
No, because it's not something, again, that I am really attracted to. To be honest with you, I didn't see the first one, not because it wasn't good, but I am just one of those people that I don't go to see something unless, just like I don't read something, unless something plunges out and grabs me by the throat and I go, oh my God, I need to see this. And Snowpiercer, as excellent as I've heard it is, it's just every time I watch the original trailer and think I should watch that, I'm like, I don't know. It's just not my thing. It's fine. There's so many hundreds of movies out there. And if I have such limited time, I like to only watch the things that really make me want to have an orgasm. So I don't think that one will. So no, this was not on my radar and I probably will skip it, especially since I didn't even see the first one.
All right. Very good. Very good. All right. So we back to you, Abe.
Okay, so next on my list is one that I'm very, very cautiously optimistic. Fingers crossed. I really don't know how this could possibly go. Godzilla versus Kong.
Versus Kong, did you say?
Yep.
Okay.
This, you know, it's now the fourth entry of this MonsterVerse series, which has been a big thing of hit or misses. The first Godzilla movie I was very mixed on. I felt they didn't really utilize monsters very well. They got rid of Bryan Cranston, who I thought was the strongest actor there, which was, I think, was a major mistake. Then King of the Monsters came along. When it was not King, then Kong Skull Island came along, and that was pretty fun. And that was, you know, a pretty good film. And then I was really looking forward to King of the Monsters, and while the creature fights were really cool, some new cool monsters and stuff like that, Kaiju Goodness was great, but the script was a jumbled mess. It's just been a real mixed bag. So this one, especially when I heard there were like reshoots and delays and stuff like that, I don't know how to feel about it because I want it to be good, but I don't know. It's, you know, the information is kind of like sparse as well. I don't want to look into it too much because I don't want to spoil myself if there's any like cool surprises, but on the other hand, I'm really kind of nervous because I don't want to suddenly invest in something that's going to disappoint me.
Right. This is interesting. It's written by Terry Rossio, who has been nominated for Best Academy Award for, believe it or not, Shrek from a few years ago. He also wrote Disney Aladdin and a number of other children's type films and Disney films, as a matter of fact, too, such as Pirates of the Caribbean films too, believe it or not. Now he's writing this one here, so that is interesting, but what's more interesting is that Adam Wingard, who's the director, who usually works with Simon Barrett as a screenwriter, now that he is doing major films, now is similar to James Wan, has gone and uses different screenwriters depending on, you know, obviously he was probably hired to do this film, so the script was going to not be his. He's done a lot of good films generally, specifically the ones that have been written by Simon Barrett. For example, he's directed You're Next, which we all enjoyed, and was written by Simon Barrett. A Horrible Way to Die, which is one of my favorite 2010 decade horror films. He's done The Guest, which was an awesome thriller. But he has done a couple of lemons too, as we know, Blair Witch, that last Blair Witch film, that was pretty bad. So who knows where this will come from. It'll be interesting too, because this is obviously the biggest budget he's ever had, because prior to this, all his budgets were probably $10 million or less, and this is probably $150 million type of budget. Alexander Skarsgård from that vampire show, True Blood, is the lead. And this may finally be his breakout, because he was supposed to become a big star after True Blood. Did a couple of films, but never really broke out. Millie Bobby Brown comes back as Madison Russell. She's best known for Stranger Things. And then the rest of the cast includes some other names, including Jessica Henwick, who was in Underwater, which we just reviewed. But also Kyle Chandler comes back, too. But it doesn't say their size of their roles, so no one really knows how big any of their roles are, except for Alexander Skarsgård and Millie Bobby Brown, who are being listed as main cast members, and everybody else has been kind of just listed further down in the credits. Chrissy, what's your opinion of Godzilla versus Kong? For me, I disliked the last one. I was not a fan of it. However, I did like the Kong Skull Island a lot. So
yeah,
it depends on which way they go. But your thoughts?
Oh, well, I'm going to see. I loved Kong Skull Island. I mean, that is still, like, I have it on Blu-ray and DVD, and it is one of my go-tos. Like, oh, I just want to clean, I don't know, I want to dust the wind, whatever the hell. I want to dust my office. I'm going to put it on and listen to it. It's one of those for me. And the commentary is phenomenal on that as well. And I'll see anything with Godzilla. I mean, I grew up with all the Godzilla films, good, bad, horrible, crappy, awesome, whatever. So I will always, always give a Godzilla movie a chance, and decide afterward whether or not I like it. I think they are, in general, hit or miss. I think Abe would agree with me. They're always hit and miss, Abe.
Yeah,
even the old ones.
Always,
I mean,
always.
You know, you'd have even in the old original series, you'd have like five or six in a row, and like one of them would be phenomenal. Two of them would be okay, and the other three would be like, "What the fuck did I just watch?
Was
god awful." Yeah, so you just gotta like, you're either the way I look at these films is you're either a Godzilla lover or you're not. And that's it. You know, you can't go there looking for quality. You really can't. You got to go for the monsters and hope for the best. So, because I am a Godzilla lover, I'm definitely interested in going. And I've been waiting for Godzilla versus Kong now for like the last, well, since Kong Skull Island came out. Because I remember Nathan leaning over to me in the theater and going, well, you know, they just did this so that they could set it all up for the Godzilla versus Kong in a few years. And I was like, oh, my God, they're going to do that? And he's like, yeah, they are. So I've been waiting for this for a while. So it was on my list, too.
And this is coming out November 20th, 2020, by Warner Brothers and Legendary Pictures. So, yeah, it's going to be exciting if it turns out to be a good film. But if it's not a good film, it still will probably make some good money, and we'll see as it gets closer. So we're now to you, Chrissy.
All right, I'm going to leap back to February a little bit. One of the movies I'm really looking forward to is called The Lodge, and it gets released on February 7th. It is... It's about this family, and there's like a stepmother and like a father. I have not seen the trailer. I just heard about it and read like the little blurb and was like, ooh, that sounds good. So they're stranded in this snowed in cabin while they're waiting for the father to get there.
Oh yeah. This is on my list too.
Yeah. And it's like, you don't know if like, it almost sounds like it's one of these, oh my God, like one of these claustrophobic things are getting, is it in our heads or is it like real supernatural? So I don't know. There is no clue here as to whether or not it is a supernatural influence or if they are going crazy. It just basically says, Riley Keough plays the soon-to-be stepmom of two young kids who are extremely bitter about their parents breaking up, but all three of them are stranded at a snowed-in cabin while dad's arrival is delayed by work. Alone in a whiteout, are the kids turning against Keough's Grace, or is the lodge turning against them all? And that just sounds really interesting to me. So I have no idea if it's going to have supernatural elements, but I've always loved the whole, like, terror in the snow thing. Like, you're alone in the snow. You're isolated in the snow. I've always been a big fan of that. So anyway, I'm looking forward to that.
Well, a couple of things that's interesting about that. And the first is that it stars Riley Keough, who is like one of the new breakout stars, or is about to break out. So this may be her film to finally become the true leading lady that a lot of folks have felt she was going to be within the past 2 to 3 years, prior to becoming a semi-famous model and the up-and-coming star. She was probably best known to be the granddaughter of Elvis Presley. And it is actually getting, from the festival circuits, it's already getting 80% approval ratings for 45 reviews, and led by an impressive Riley Keough performance. The Lodge should prove a suitably unsettling destination for fans of darkly atmospheric horror. So, yeah, this one's looking like it's going to be damn good, Chrissy, so I'm right there with you. Before we continue, co-host Mike has just joined us, so welcome, Mike.
Hello.
And so,
hi, Mike.
Yeah.
Hey, Mike. So,
hi. Sorry, that was messed up on my end. But anyway.
No worries.
So Phil sent me the list. How's everything going? How's everyone going? How's everyone doing?
All right.
Sorry.
Yep, everybody's doing well. So it's a round table thing. So we figured that you could join us whenever you were able to finally make it on. So no worries there. This film actually was originally from Sundance from January of 2019. So it had been doing the festival circuits for basically a year. So it'll be curious to see if it will get a main release or a VOD release, because the distribution is by a company called Neon, which may not have access to big theaters like some stuff like Warner Brothers and whatnot. Mike, have you heard about this film?
The Lodge?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's tough, you know, because we're dealing with, you know, for a lot of these just descriptions, and this sounds like it's something that's atmospheric, but a lot of these have fairly, like I hear Chrissy saying, we don't know if this is supernatural or what. A lot of these descriptions are hard to really peg what the film's going to be sometimes. So yes, it was certainly one that was on the list that I was looking at. But a lot of question marks for me, because I'm not sure, you know, don't even have like a trailer necessarily to go by.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. So it'll be interesting to see as we get closer. Any thoughts, Abe?
I'm really interested in this one. I love psychological thrillers. I love the ambiguity of whether or not it's supernatural or just the deterioration of the mental psyche. It looks pretty tense. So I'm looking forward to this one, fingers crossed, and I wait for release.
All right, very good. So before we go to the next film, let me just read off what we have so far for listeners who are keeping track. The film Antlers, the film The Turning, the film The Color Out of Space, which Chrissy mentioned in passing, along with The Turning, Wonder Woman 1984. The Candyman, I guess, remake or prequel, The Indian Netflix film Ghost Stories. The television show Hulu by Alex Garland, Devs. Train to Busan 2. The independent horror film Swallow. The TNT television show Snowpiercer. The Godzilla vs. Kong sequel. And then The Lodge. And since we're doing alphabetical order by first name, Mike, you actually come next after Chrissy.
Okay, so one coming up, I believe, in February, and I know there's a trailer out for it already, and may surprise people that it's going in as a horror film, is, I think it's from Blumhouse, is the Fantasy Island film.
Yes, right. Yes, so totally psyched about this. Oh, my God.
Which
totally
one?
Fantasy Island.
Oh, that one looks strange, yeah.
Right. Now, it is a little weird to put it there. But it's the stars Michael Pena, who some people might know for his supporting role in the Ant-Man films. But
He was also in, I think, Devil, right?
Yes, I think he was.
Yeah, and he was also in Crash. The Academy Award winning film from Tom Haggis from a few years back. But yeah, continue, Mike.
Yeah, so this is obviously a new take on the classic TV series with Ricardo Montalban and Ray Villechaize. And it's got kind of a dark spin on it. And there was always some dark energy to some episodes of Fantasy Island. Because one of the things you always get with a fantasy is the old, be careful what you wish for. And, you know, it certainly seems like it's going to be an element here. Again, I'm picking episodes. Again, I haven't mentioned it since, you know, a year ago. So,
It's my understanding from the what little I've read, Mike, and I haven't seen the trailer, that they're going to focus on dark fantasies, like I want to get revenge on this person, or you know, like stuff that isn't on the up and up anyway. That's kind of what I read.
Right, but I was going to say my selections tend to be stuff, maybe not necessarily the stuff I'm most looking forward to, but the stuff I'm most curious to see. And this is definitely one I'm curious to see what they do with it. Because, again, you're taking a family-friendly franchise, or has been. There was a reboot about 10, 15 years ago with Malcolm McDowell that also had kind of a darker edge to it, maybe 20 years ago, and didn't last long. But. You know, so there is potential there. I don't know, like I said, I don't know exactly what they're doing with it. There is a trailer out there if anybody wants to see it. I haven't had checked it. I checked it out when it first aired, but I tend not to revisit the trailers because the more you watch them, the more stuff sticks in your head. But I think that's coming out around Valentine's Day.
It's actually coming out on Valentine's Day. It's directed by Jeff Wadlow, who's actually had mixed results with Truth or Dare and Kick-Ass 2. I'm actually looking forward to his adaption of Danger Girl, the comic book series that is supposed to come out in a couple of years from now. He's supposed to write and direct that. That'll be awesome because I used to love that comic book. The film stars, as you said, Michael Pena. The only other folks I know is in this list of people that are listed here is Michael Rooker and Maggie Q. That'll be interesting. It was cheaply made, $7 million, typical Blumhouse film. It's going to be everywhere, blasted out everywhere. And they, I believe it or not, they're already projecting that it will make 12 to 16 million over its 4-day weekend, even though it's over a month from now. They'll be curious to see what it does. But I was surprised too, Mike, when I saw the trailer and found out that it's horror. And the IMDb says a horror adaptation of the popular 70s TV show about a magical island resort. And for folks who don't know, the show was big back in the late 70s and early 80s. It was a show that it was part of Can't Miss TV. Was with Dallas and, you know, all those type of shows. And,
Dallas was CBS. This was part of Love Boat. This was on. You had Love Boat in the, like, at, I think, 8 o'clock, and then Fantasy Island at 9. Yeah. I don't remember if it was Friday or Saturday that it aired.
I know those shows had some charm to it. And I used to watch it all the time as a youngster. I'll be curious about this.
Yeah, and for 1 hour and 50 minutes. Yeah, if you were, what? How long is it?
Hour and 50 minutes.
Yeah, well, for those, and I don't know how. I have no idea how they're doing the format of this. But the format of the old show, both versions of it, you have Mr. Rourke as the host on the island. People come to the island for their fantasy. In this case, it might be it's someone's dark fantasy. And, you know, sort of the same way it worked with the Love Boat, but you had three guest stars who were usually B actors, you know, the kind of guest celebrities you'd see on game shows and whatnot a lot of times, would come to, you know, they would get three of them per episode. So you'd have to tell three different stories, right? The plane would arrive, three guests would come off the plane. And usually there'd be like a romantic one and a funny one and then a dramatic one, right, were the three stories that they told. And sometimes usually the dramatic one could get a little scary depending on how they did it. So which one was the lead story? You know, you had what they call an A, B, and C story. So which was the main story and which were the backup stories would vary from week to week. I have no idea how they're playing this out with this film. Are they going to all be dark and dramatic? Is there going to be humor in it? I have no idea. I don't know who the guests are, right? But certainly, and there's always an ish question of who was Mr. Rourke? How does he have the ability to control these fantasies? Sometimes the fantasies are very easy. You know, I can, you know, to stage, you know, you just arrange to meet people and, oh, you got, I like someone says, oh, I wish I'd never let my old high school flame get away. And you get there and she's there. And that obviously means nothing. But then there's others where there's obvious magic that's involved. And that's all stuff that's left as a mystery. Yeah. The show never really addresses it.
Yeah. So it's a lot of sci-fi fantasy to it. It's definitely genre, the original TV show, but it was more drama and TV family friendly, even if it did have some moments of suspense. Anybody else have any thoughts on this one? Anything else? Or we're good? All right, sounds good. All right, so it goes to me next. I'm going to go with a film from someone that I'm hoping will rejuvenate his career, because earlier in his career he was really good before he had some unfortunate things recently, including some personal issues that related to illnesses in his family that he had to have pull out of some projects. But Zack Snyder is back this year with directing and co-writing a new film called Army of the Dead. Army of the Dead. And basically, Army of the Dead brings him back to his film debut, which was Dawn of the Dead, zombie genre. And unlike that film, though, which was written by the great director of Guardians of the Galaxy. What's his name, Mike? The director of Guardians of the Galaxy.
I was going to say his next. James Gunn.
James Gunn, yeah. So James Gunn wrote the screenplay for Dawn of the Dead. This screenplay is by Snyder and then two other folks, Shea Haddon and Joby Harold, who haven't really done much. Shea Haddon worked on John Wick Chapter 3. So that'll be interesting how his take, you doing John Wick and bring it to a zombie film could be done. But either way, Army of the Dead stars Dave Bautista, who folks probably know from Guardians of the Galaxy, Garrett Dillahunt, among other folk that I have never heard of. But this is what it says from an article I found online. It says, Jack Snyder of Justice League is back in the director's chair after taking a short break from Hollywood in 2017. According to Hollywood Reporter, the Snyders, because his wife produces it, I've come out with a new film where a Las Vegas-based zombie apocalypse for Netflix. So it will be released on Netflix, or at least released by Netflix, because now a lot of Netflix films go straight to the theaters first. It comes out October 19th, and based off of what I see, it seems like it's almost like that zombie video game that took place in Las Vegas a couple years ago. Dead Rising. Yeah, so it'll be curious to see how they play it out and whatnot. Dave Bautista is one of those guys that is slowly making a pretty good name for himself in genre films. And if he's playing a part of a group of mercenaries, that makes some interesting acting chances for him to, you know, really shine.
He's interested because he's trying to make his solo career outside of wrestling, and like he did Stuber, I think last year was one of them. But like which is happening with a lot of actors, is they're having success in like the Marvel films, but it's not translating. Chadwick Boseman was from Black Panther, was in, I think, film called was it 21 Bridges? Or as I'm thinking, he was in a film. I don't think it did that great, you know. So even though he was the star of a billion-dollar film, that's not enough to carry that into a franchise or have him as a breakout solo career.
Well, you've always said that those films are more the character than either the director or the actor, to be honest.
Right, and the line I've been hearing for some time is that people are not so much interested in hearing and seeing, Chadwick Boseman as they are Chadwick Boseman as Black Panther. You know, it's the marrying of the actor and the character. You know, like you got lucky, like Chris Pratt, right, is another example. Now, Chris Pratt did fantastically in Guardians of the Galaxy, did really well in Jurassic World. But how much of Jurassic World was because Chris Pratt was in it, and how much of it was because it was just a Jurassic Park film with giant dinosaurs? And, you know, you can point to movies he's done like Passengers that just bombed. Mm-hmm. So it's a question of how much is it the material and how much is it the actor.
Now, this film here actually has a budget of $90 million. So Zack Snyder, even with a couple of unfortunate misses, is still able to pull in a huge budget for original material in this case, because he actually is the story person behind this film. That's never mind that he co-wrote the screenplay for. That'll be interesting. Mike, I know you're a huge zombie fan. Are you looking forward to this, or did you even know it existed?
Oh yeah, I know. So we mentioned it on the Facebook page in the past. You've put links to it. I'm pretty sure it's been around. I didn't know it was coming out this year. There hasn't been a whole lot of word on it yet. I didn't see it in any of my researching for this year. But yeah, I'm curious to see what he does.
Very well. Anybody else have any thoughts on this film?
Well, I thought Zack Snyder's remake of Dawn of the Dead was pretty awesome. I'm not sure how this will turn out, but hopefully it's good. So, you know, I'll wait and see.
All right. Very well. We go back to you, Abe.
Let's see. Another one I was kind of looking at was, well, another as a sequel to a film that was a pretty big hit.
and I didn't think that we're going to make a sequel, but I shouldn't have been surprised it was just going to get a sequel. And that is A Quiet Place 2.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, as I said, I'm kind of interested, but I'm not interested. I don't know how to feel about it. Because I enjoyed the first one, but I don't know.
Well, I thought the first one, honestly, for me, was rocking. It was high art. My nerves were shot. I thought it was fantastic. I overlooked any of its faults because it was such an emotional ride. But what I read, when I first heard they were doing Quiet Place 2, I was like, all right, lightning does not strike twice. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Second thing is that I read about this, and it's going to be the backstory. It's going to be like, oh, how they got to that point, like how it originally happened. And honestly, to me, I mean, that shit's boring. Like, to me, I just don't care. Like, I already know how the story ends. That's kind of like saying, let me go read the end of the novel. Now I'm going to go read the beginning. I don't care. And that's just a personal preference.
Chrissy,
but that's the problem I had with Fear the Walking Dead.
Chrissy, I think you're mistaken, because this isn't supposed to be a prequel. This is supposed to be immediately an aftermath of the first film.
That's not what I read.
Yeah, actually, I'm reading right here. It is a sequel.
Yeah, it's a sequel. It's not a prequel.
I've also heard that maybe it touches on what happens, but I wouldn't be shocked if they were to do something where you might have a flashback to what started. The trailer is very heavy on what happens after.
This is the synopsis from Wiki, and it says following the deadly events at home, the Abbott family must now face the terrors of the outside world as they continue their fight for survival in silence. Forced to venture into the unknown, they quickly realize that the creatures that hunt by sound are not the only threats that lurk beyond the sand path. And based off of this, too, is that Krasinski, even though he directs and wrote it, does not star in it, meaning his character is already dead.
Spoiler warning.
Yeah. Well, it's a few years old now. And Cillian Murphy and Digimon Hunsu and someone joined the cast. But my concern, even though I love Emily Blunt and she's awesome, she's my favorite actress, my concern is that Krasinski is writing this film himself, and the real people that wrote the original script, Brian Woods and Scott Beck, are not participating in it. So that makes me a little concerned. Really? A little concerned, yeah.
I think, and I could be wrong, I thought their script got heavily rewritten in the first place. But if you watch the trailer, Phil, it does start with the days before. Yeah, so it does, okay. This is going to be tough. Now, again, whether this film is 50-50, 20-30, what the mix is, but there is some flashback aspect to
it. Like The Godfather 2.
Right, could be something like that.
Right. So you could be partly right, Chrissy, even though Krasinski isn't listed in the cast, which makes me wonder if it is going to have much prequel stuff, unless the prequel doesn't even include the Abbott family and Cillian Murphy and Digimon Hunsu are like scientists or something, or spacemen.
The prequel it's starting with Emily Blunt in the car with the family.
Okay, so maybe Krasinski just doesn't put himself in the cast because he's basically writing and directing. He's not even bothering putting his name in the cast, maybe?
Well, he might not. I mean, this is literally, I think, sort of like mom coming back from the supermarket or something like that with the kids.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
All right, so dad is maybe alive for this segment, but he's not there. And if he's in the film at all, probably will be brief, because it's only the prequel stuff.
Gotcha.
But there seems to be a lot more emphasis on the what happens when they leave the house.
Mm-hmm. Now, the thing that I'm liking about the synopsis that I read
is they quickly realize that the creatures that hunt by sound are not the only threats that lurk beyond the sand path. So I'm thinking this could be something like The Mist, maybe?
I think it's Soylent Green.
Repeat that once more?
I think it's Soylent Green. Soylent Green, it's people. I think the other threat is people. You know, that they venture out and they run into people. We've seen the zombie movies, right? And who's the real threat in the zombie movies? It's not the zombies, it's some other schmuck.
Yep.
Right. Right. I see what you're saying, Mike. Yeah. Now, another thing that's interesting about this film is that Michael Bay is producing it, which may scare some people away. But he did produce the first one, so it may not be an issue for those who are concerned about Michael Bay. All right. So that's interesting. I hope it's not too much about people because that's been done too many times in the post-apocalyptic worlds. So I'd rather see new beasts, but you're probably right. There's not going to be new beasts.
You know me. I'm a monster guy. I would much rather see a new monster. So
yeah, me too.
But if I had to guess as to what the problem is, it would
it's
be people.
People. Yeah, it usually is because people suck.
Yeah, you're right. This is what Cillian Murphy's character plays, a character named Emmett, and Murphy described his character, Emmett, as the following. For me, Emmett represents where the heart of the world lies right now, which is, finally, feeling like they've all given up. Here comes this girl, Regan, which is the deaf girl in the film, who allows you to believe in more and allows you to believe in yourself. That idea I've always been really enthralled by, which is interesting because Cillian Murphy, ever since 28 Days Later when he was the hero, has unfortunately been typecast as a villain continuously, and it's probably because of his intense look and his very light blue eyes. But here, it may turn out to be that he may not be a villain in this film. So that would be good. I would like to see him not be typecast as a villain again. And then it says for Digimon Hunsu's character, there's no mention on his character. So what about you, Mike? Are you worried about this film? Because Abe and Chrissy said that they are a bit concerned. What about yourself?
This is one of those things I was perfectly happy to let lie, and with only one film. But I'm a sucker like anyone else. I'm curious to see what they do with it. The fact that you have the original director still involved, the original cast still involved, keeps me hopeful. I've liked what I saw in the trailer. Clearly, this will have a bigger budget. But that can be as much a blessing or as a curse. As much a curse as a blessing, rather, with a horror film. So we'll see. I'm open to anything.
Yep. So A Quiet Place is just like Train to Busan, were Dark Discussion's best film of the year when those films came out. So two sequels coming out this year of what at least Dark Discussions has considered two of the best horror films of the decade. So that is interesting that they're going back to the well for that. And we'll see. So this comes out March 20th.
Wow, that's not too far away. Holy shit, okay.
Not too far away at all. All right, so now we go back to you, Chrissy.
There is a movie coming out. I believe it's supposed to be released again on Valentine's Day called After Midnight. And it's about a man who's really...
What's it called? I missed that. I missed it. What was the film?
After Midnight.
Okay.
And it's about this guy who his relationship of 10 years, breaks up. And there's every night since the woman has broken up with him, there's a monster trying to get into his house. So... It sounds, that's really all I know about it. I haven't actually Googled to see if maybe there's a trailer, but it sounds kind of interesting in that I think it has real potential for some kind of comment on loss after the breakup of, you know, losing someone you love. I think it also probably has the potential to be another one of these. Is this real or is this in his head? Because he's so traumatized. And I don't know. It just looked interesting to me. I would have to actually see the trailer to decide if I'd be jumping up and down to go see it. Because sometimes the descriptions sound awesome, and then I watch the trailer and I go, oh, not so much. But we'll see. So well, that's the next one I'm looking forward to.
A couple of interesting things about this film here is it's been doing the festival circuits for about a year now. And it's co-directed by Jeremy Gardner and Christian Stella. Now, the thing that's interesting about it is that Jeremy Gardner, some folks may know, and I know you know Mike, and you probably do Chrissy too, was the director and star of The Battery, the zombie film. Connecticut.
Yeah, I liked The Battery. I actually saw that and I enjoyed it because I thought it was a little bit different. So be good.
And he actually had a major role in a film that me and Mike recently saw called Bliss from last year, as a matter of fact. This film here, he actually stars in it too. So he's doing double duty where he co-directs and stars. And it says the IMDb for it, there's a couple here. When his long-suffering girlfriend disappears, suddenly leaving a cryptic note as her only explanation, Hank's comfortable life and his sanity begin to crack. Then from the woods surrounding his house, something terrible starts trying to break in. Also says, for small-town bar owner Hank, his 10-year relationship with Abby has been storybook quality. Abby, however, wants more, such as marriage, to be exact, which Hank doesn't seem ready to initiate anytime soon. As a result, she leaves him without so much as a note or any subsequent communication. Hank is crushed. Even worse, Abby's departure seemingly triggers the arrival of an unseen monster that claws at Hank's front door at night. As the nocturnal threat intensifies, Hank must figure out how to not only save his relationship, but also himself. So based off of that, it sounds like it may be in his head or mental demons, really, that mm-hmm. are unreliable narrator, maybe?
It feels like our approach is very similar to The Lodge, where the supernatural is kind of, suspected, but it might not actually be that.
Right.
And that's exactly what appeals to me, any of those unreliable narrator things, because I'm such a Poe freak. I always want to take a look at them and see what it's all about,
Maybe I missed it. So there is a trailer, Chrissy, because this was going to be the next one on my list. So thanks for taking it.
No problem, dude. No problem.
Because it is a monster film. Or not. We'll see. So you can watch the trailer. The trailer does say from the team that brought you Spring, The Endless, and The Battery. Now, do we know who's on this? Is this just from the same producers as Spring and Endless? Because it's not the same director.
No. The director is actually Gardner and this other guy. So I'm assuming it's the production company.
Yeah. All right. So I'm glad that they're tagging with that because it's been more than a few minutes since The Battery came out.
It's 7 years.
Oh shit. Yeah, because I know that was one that was big when we first started the podcast.
That's correct.
That alone.
Well,
you
know what it is. He had a small role in Spring.
Okay.
So he knows them, and then it's not surprising that he played the drug dealer in Bliss, because the guy that directed Bliss is from Rhode Island, and his prior film before Bliss took place in Danbury, Connecticut. So the Connecticut New England connection is there.
Where I live,
Yeah, but anyway, continue.
Why the hell they'd set a movie in Danbury? I don't know.
Oh, he was actually in The Mind's Eye, as well as Bliss. And The Mind's Eye is the one that takes place in Danbury, Connecticut, made by the same director, which is kind of interesting.
Because that's, I think, Christy, because that's where he lives, and it's cheaper to film where you live.
Yeah, probably.
Oh yeah, this is true, because if you live here too, this area is very tightly knit with people who grew up here with everybody else, and everybody scratches everybody else's back. So you can get a lot of crap for free here very easily. Very easily. If you live here, it's easy.
Yeah. Any other things on this film, anybody? All right. Sounds good. So After Midnight, possibly a February release. And most likely a VOD release as well. So now we go back to you, Mike.
Yeah, so probably more than any genre. I think that horror builds itself on its franchises. And, you know, so I want to pick at least one franchise film. And here's one that's coming out. I'm not saying I have any hopes for it, but I enjoyed the first film, and it's an attempt to start it as a new franchise, and that's coming out very soon. I think it's Escape Room 2.
Yep.
I enjoyed the first film. It is kind of a Saw light, you know, in that it puts people in traps, but, you know, it doesn't have the body horror element to it. It wasn't a perfect film by any means. But I was interested in where it was going as they're sort of setting up and explaining who was it that was running it and whatnot. Now that we're in that universe, I could very easily deal with watching a whole film of people trying to solve those puzzles again. I just found it entertaining. So I'll be curious to see if this manages to be successful. If it manages to draw in a new audience, you know, or build on the audience the first one had, because the first one was, I think, a January release, right?
Yeah, and the new one's going to be a November release, November 20th. Yeah.
November. Okay, I thought it was
November 30th. I'm sorry. Yeah, so it looks like around right after Thanksgiving.
All right. Yeah, and I'm just looking at the trailer. The trailer is focusing on a plane crash, and all that may just be what they filmed at the point of having to release the trailer. And that's why the scene is there. So it's been focusing on one trap, you know, one escape room rather than, you know, showing sequences from them all. So it's more just a teaser that, hey, this is coming back. But yeah, I'm just curious to see, can they launch this? Are we going to be dealing with Escape Room 5 and everyone will be sick of it in a couple of years? But you know, that is the horror genre cycle.
Sure. Sure. Now the director has had some pretty good track record. His name is Adam Robitaille, who did a lot of work on a lot of Bryan Singer films. But then he went off on his own and did The Taking of Deborah Logan. That was his directorial debut from Motion Pictures. And then he did this Lee Whannell film, Insidious, The Last Key, which was a huge box office success, and a lot of folks thought it was pretty solid in that franchise. So then he did Escape Room, and now he's doing Escape Room 2. So yeah, I'm looking forward to this too, Mike. I felt Escape Room was actually a hidden gem from last year. It was actually the first horror film of the year that came out at theaters, and it was actually a pretty damn solid one too, and I liked it a lot. And again, I pretty much liked all the other three films that this director did as well, especially The Taking of Deborah Logan, which was a hidden gem for sure. You would love that, Chrissy, if you haven't seen it, because it's a
I own it. I love that movie. Yeah, it's fantastic. I think it's awesome. You guys had talked about it, and that was when I was in a phase where I was just buying every like found footage or semi found footage film out there to build my collection. And except for like the very end of that movie, the tail end, I was a little disappointed in the ending, but I loved it. I thought it was great all the way up till then. I do have a question about Escape Room 2.
Yep.
Since we seem to be running into differing, like where we're getting our information, the descriptions are a little different. What I read or what I understood about Escape Room 2 was that it wasn't necessarily going to be about escape rooms, that it was going to follow the survivors of the last one as they tracked down the people who tortured them and punished them. Like it was a more of a revenge film, and that didn't appeal to me. So I certainly hope the description I read is wrong, because I'm with you guys. I had a blast watching Escape Room and watching people do the puzzles and everything, and I'd so much rather do that.
Well,
if this sounds like a revenge thing, I'm not interested. Like, forget
it. But it's still, but they, you know, they've got to stick with the theme, right? So, if you remember correctly, the last film, I think, ended with them on a plane. And,
right. Yep, you're right.
And I got to be honest, I only saw the film the one time. I don't even remember what the actors looked like. I just found the trailer online, so I don't know if the same actors are in that scene or are in that scene at all that I was watching in the trailer. But it's in the plane is the escape room, you know, so they're trying to figure out how to stop it. So I could just easily see those characters or other characters being put through their paces. And because we're on the podcast, by the way, I couldn't hear the sound. So someone said, but they said it was for they'd already been through this. So I didn't hear the sound. I just saw what was there. Sorry. There's still going to be an escape room element to it, right? You're not going to do, you know, a sequel to that film and completely blow up the formula.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Well, if it takes place on the plane, the cast will be obviously the other passengers and crew. So that would be interesting. It does include the original two survivors in the cast, which were I forget their names, but no worries. The most interesting cast member to be added is Isabel Furman, who played the orphan. And we've seen her in a couple other films recently, and Eric thinks she's a really good actress as an adult now, and I would agree. She's a pretty solid actress, and me and Eric thought she was going to break out as a star like 3 or 4 years ago, and that hasn't happened, but that's a good addition to the cast.
Because weirdly enough, people don't want to cast creepy kids in their movies.
Yeah, so but it was Logan Miller and India Moore were the two lead survivors, so they're in this one as well. Yeah, you're right though. It is kind of funny that they have not had roles, maybe being typecast as you said, creepy kids. Yeah, you know, she has been or something. Who knows? But she was in The Cell, the Stephen King movie that would bomb, but she was pretty good in that. And she had a really good role as a villain in The Hunger Games. But generally hasn't been able to break out. So maybe this will help her career a bit. Anybody else have any other thoughts on Escape Room 2?
I never saw the first one. So, I mean, would I have to watch the first one to know what's going on in this one?
Don't know. But it's worth seeing the first one. It was a good film.
Okay.
Right. And this is one advantage to having seen the first one is that there was more of a science fiction fantasy element, I guess, you know, that there were things in the escape room that just weren't plausible in the real world, you know, as we have it with our current technology. And so having that was like one of my few complaints, I think, really about that film was that they're just clearly a little out there. But now that that's basically the world that we're in, and I know that going into the film, you know, I'll be in a better mind frame, I guess, to appreciate or just deal with that. That's the world we're in. Right. I'm not going to question it as much. And I just recognize that they're going to have the ability. The people doing the escape room thing have the ability to do things that would not normally be possible using regular 2020 technology, even though we're in the future now.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this movie is like Belko Experiment or you know, films like that, where there's this like hidden company that runs these games and stuff, and the technology is always better than whatever. So like The Furies was another one that we just saw that had technology that was better than the real world. So yeah, I agree with you on that one, Mike. All right, so now it goes back to me, and I'm going to start with another film that we mentioned a couple of times and is related to the film that Chrissy mentioned, After Midnight, which is a film called VFW. 2019 comes out on Valentine's Day as well. This is directed by Joe Bagos, who is the director of a number of good horror films, depending on your taste. He did Almost Human, which was probably a hidden gem from back in 2013. Then he did The Mind's Eye, which is the film that takes place in Danbury, Connecticut. And then he did last year's film, 2019, Bliss, which I know Mike wasn't a fan of, but has gotten like 89% good reviews on Rotten Tomatoes and been reviewed by major news outlets, and I thought it was one of the best horror films of last year myself, though it is an art house meets the grindhouse type of film. This film here, VFW, is his latest, which oddly comes out just a couple of months after Bliss, and it's about this. A group of war veterans must defend their local VFW post and an innocent teen against a deranged drug dealer and his relentless army of punk mutants. So what that means, so it's obviously going to be a assault on precinct, you know, 13 or whatever type of film, where a group of people stuck in a building and have to defend the building from the monsters outside, which appear to be punk mutants. The big name I know from this film is probably Stephen Lang, who was in Avatar and also Don't Breathe. And he is one of the leads in this. The rest of the cast, I'm not really too familiar with. So it's not anybody big named. The writers of the film are Max Brailer and Matthew Ardle. Max Brailer wrote some of The Sopranos, and Matthew Ardle worked on a number of films, including Transformers, but neither of them are big names. Joe Bagos is probably the biggest name out of the people behind the movie, and he's kind of pretty much every film that he's directed has gotten really good reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, and have been written about by major publications, and so he could be one of those directors that may be able to take the next step and become a superstar, similar to Wingard, and maybe get a big Hollywood production one of these days. But yeah, that's the film I'm looking forward to. I'm not sure if anybody has heard about it or have any thoughts on it.
I haven't.
You haven't, Abe? You haven't heard about this? Yeah. Mike, what's your thoughts? I know you've seen two of his films at least.
Yeah, I really dislike Bliss, but that's a stylistic thing. Go listen to that review. I did like Almost Human. And did say, I'm curious to see what he does next. I figured you were going to hit on this one, Phil. Yeah, so I'm curious to see it. It doesn't sound like it says it's an action horror film. It sounds kind of like
Green Room, maybe.
Yeah, that was what I was thinking. So I'm sure if it is, it'll be one of those movies that, like Green Room, people will argue whether it's horror or not. But if you like Green Room, it sounds like this might be a thing for you. Maybe.
Right. The one thing that makes it curious is the punk mutant. So does mutants actually mean mutant, or does it mean you know, just freaks or something. So we'll figure that out when it comes out. Because then if it is actual mutants, then I guess it'll probably be thrown right into horror. While if they're just freaks, then it'll be probably thrown into thriller, I guess. But we'll figure it out as we get closer. Chrissy, what about you? I know you haven't seen any of this guy's movies yet, though he has connections to Danbury, Connecticut. Any thoughts on this one?
No, not really. I mean, you know, I probably will check it out.
All right, fair enough. All right, so we are back to you, Abe.
I only have one more on my list.
Okay.
My last film for my list is a film that's probably coming out actually this end of this month called Gretel and Hansel. This is a film being directed by Oz Perkins, stars Sophia Lillis, Alice Kriggs. It's basically a take on, of course, the old Brothers Grimm fairy tale Hansel and Gretel. Basically, the setup is sounds pretty much the same here. Pretty much the premise is follows. The story is described as being set a long time ago in a distant fairy tale countryside, focusing on a young girl who leads her yellow brother into a dark wood in desperate search for food and work, only to stumble upon a nexus of terrifying evil. The trailer looks very bizarre, and if I remember, Alice Craig, she was in Rose Red, if I recall. Was she? Let me click. Anyways, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, while you look up whatever you have to look up, Oz Perkins is the son of Tony Perkins, and Barry Berenson. Both are passed away much too early. Anthony Perkins died a few years back, but Barry Berenson, I think she died in 9/11. She was on one of the planes. This director has a mixed results. He's done The Black Coat's Daughter and I Am the Pretty Thing That Lives in the House. Both of those films have generally got good reviews, but have had a lot of debate about them because a lot of people hate the films and a lot of people like the films. So he's one of those directors that you either love his stuff or you hate his stuff. Whether this will be similar to those two, I'm guessing it will, because it seems dark fantasy or magical realism. I'm probably going to say I'm not going to like it because I didn't like the other two films all that much. But if you liked either of those other two films, this film may be a film for you. Again, there's no reviews yet about it. We don't really know. We don't really know yet if the critics will like it. Go on in.
I mean, I haven't seen either of those films myself. I've been mistaken. I remember now why I recognized this act, Alice Craig. She was actually the antagonist in the Silent Hill movie. But as for the film itself, I mean, it looked really cool. I mean, it looks kind of eerie. It could be terrible. It could be not. I just caught a glimpse of it and thought, maybe it's on the radar. It was kind of hard actually putting this list together because I was looking at films that I would be most interested in watching versus just picking out anything here and there. But I guess it's one of the fun things on this episode. Sometimes we could share things we might have missed that others have caught whiff of.
Well, the critic—he's a critical darling, so his films are of interest. There's no doubt about it. And he could be one of those guys that could jump to the next level if you think about it, because he's done films that have been noted by major publications. The producers of the film. Is the same guys that did Sinister and The Autopsy of Jane Doe. So obviously these guys and those two films were fantastic. So these guys, you know, usually can pick good films. And if this film is more like Sinister or Autopsy of Jane Doe, then I'm going to love this film. But we'll figure it out. Any thoughts, Mike or Chrissy?
I've been seeing the trailers for this for a while. I'm assuming they flipped the name to avoid confusion with the Hansel and Gretel film that came out not that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely want to see it. It's coming in just a couple of weeks. So we'll find out maybe even before this is released. But I will say I did not like Pretty Little Thing That Lives in the House, and I still haven't caught up with The Black Coat's Daughter.
Fair enough. Chrissy, what about yourself?
Again, one of my personal things. Not really a super big fan of retellings of fairy tales or anything that's connected to that stuff. I just kind of, you know, I just don't really enjoy that. It doesn't attract me. It might be good. Sometimes I'll see it on TV later and go, oh, that was pretty good. But it's not something that I go, oh, I'm going to the movies to see it. So unless we actually do an episode on it, I'll probably skip it.
All right. Fair enough. So we go back to you, Chrissy.
I am really interested in this movie called Antebellum. It is directed, or it's got something to do with the writers of Get Out. I think it's the people who produced Get Out and Us.
That's correct.
Yeah, and Antebellum, it just looks really interesting. It's about a woman who, it has to do with like time travel, I think, or something. And she, of course, gets transported back to the time of the Civil War. And she's in an alternate reality. So it says it cuts back and forth between modern day and the Civil War. And she is in both timelines, I guess. And there is a presence, an evil presence that is stalking her in both timelines. So I'm just, I don't know that it's not very clear. Yeah, I don't know. It's not very clear, but it just looks interesting. So I don't know. It just looks interesting and different. I'm interested in it.
Well, I think the interesting thing for me is, as a horror aspect, is certainly slavery was horrific, but there is a thing where if they do set movies in the antebellum South, the pre-Civil War South, the characters that are there have lived with slavery their whole lives, right? Mm-hmm. So they may hate it, they may be miserable about it, but the horror element isn't really there because it's an everyday institution. Whereas if you were to, well, sort of like today, if you take someone, if you do these, what was that film? Shuttle? You remember that, Phil?
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
And there's been others, but that's the first one that just popped in my head, where you're dealing with human trafficking, right, which is modern slavery. So if you take someone who is living in the present day, and I've seen mixed comments, so I don't know if people are confused by the trailer or if the trailer is confusing, or, you know, who's getting mixed messages, that either whether she's going into an alternate reality where, you know, there wasn't a civil war, or whether she's going into the past. And I've seen two different things, but the idea of taking an African-American from 2020 and putting them in the South in that era would, you know, obviously be a culture shock. That would be not a, I'm an oppressed person. No, that would be a fucking horrific thing for any, and I imagine the biggest, that if you were a black person living in the United States, that has to be really high up on your list of nightmare things, right? Like, nobody here grew up with stories we know stories of slaves in the South, but it was never a, this is what happened to you and your ancestors, right? We didn't grow up with stories necessarily of how our, you know,
my ancestors didn't come over until, you know, early 1900s, and left, and the other ones didn't come over until 1885 or 1895 from Canada. So, yeah, we didn't have that. While the African American folk have been here since the beginning of this nation, so yeah, their roots are as equal to the white settlers here as well. And so their stories of the formation of the colonies and this country are a little different than the Eric Websters of the world, whose ancestors have been here since the Mayflower. So, and they came over differently. So I see exactly what you're saying.
Right, but I'm saying, and it's just background, right? So I'm 49, and the Civil Rights Act had already been passed. Martin Luther King had done his marches and died. Obviously, the Civil Rights Movement was not over when I was born, but a tremendous amount of progress had been made. But my oldest cousins, if we lived in the South, would have been able to remember, whites-only drinking fountains. So while I always grew up with that in my rearview mirror, there are, obviously cohorts of people still alive today. Certainly my parents could remember if they had lived down in the South. They didn't, but can remember that. And these are stories that are going to be people being told, right? If you have, I have to imagine if you're an African American family, you've heard these stories of your parents and grandparents and great grandparents, if they're still with you, being passed down of the fights, but also the oppression and the, and the fire hose and the dogs, et cetera, and the lynchings and all these things are a very recent wound. And that still goes all the way back to the slavery. And no, I've heard about, the Irish need not apply, in the United States when, in the late 19th century or early 20th century. But that's a completely different thing than you could be locked up in chains and completely lose all of your rights. And that's part of the story that you have to grow up with and you deal with. So the idea of bringing that nightmare to life, this is definitely one on my list, Chrissy. I think this is another one that is begging for a group of five white people to sit around and talk about.
Yes, I think so too. I think so too. I think it sounds awesome.
So the premise is, successful author Veronica Henley finds herself trapped in a nightmarish reality and must find a way to break free of the horrors at hand. And obviously that horror is the antebellum South, where she gets transported during or pre-Civil War days when slavery is rampant. And as a African-American folk, she would be treated quite bad in those days. And so that's the horror that she's going to experience, obviously. It'll be interesting. Not sure how it'll be. It'll probably be well received by critics because of the people behind the film. And of course, it's relevant in today's divided society, at least in this country, and actually probably around the entire world, because we see it everywhere now. So it'll be curious to see how it appears. Coming out April 24th, not too far from now.
Yeah, a lot of these movies are actually coming really soon.
Yeah, pretty quick. A lot of them.
I think a lot of that's just the genre, is that horror films are usually not that hard to produce. And they don't get a lot of lead time. I mean, you go all the way back to the 80s and you had like a new Friday the 13th film come out every year. And a lot of these are independent films, so they don't have a lot of, they're on the festival circuit, but they haven't been picked up. And then once they're picked up, they're dropped in theaters in a couple of months. So you don't usually know what's happening a lot of times in the back half of the year. We tend to know more what's front loaded. Unless it's a big franchise film, which somebody else may mention as we continue with the podcast.
Sure. Since we're almost about 2 hours in, and Abe's list is out, I guess me and Mike will give our last official topic, and then after that we'll list anything else that we want to, quickly and whatnot, and then do some house cleaning. So, Mike, it's uh, no, actually, it's a uh, You know, it is you, Mike. Yeah, you're next.
All right. Since we're wrapping up, let me just throw out, I usually pick a superhero film, and I'm going to pick one I've picked before because it's finally coming out, which was New Mutants. You can go back. This has been postponed for like 3 or 4 years now because it was a Fox production, and it got – they decided it was a – it's a horror film, which ties into the origin. It's in the X-Men franchise, but it ties into the origins of the stories from somewhere around issue 18 to 30 or so of the series with Chris Claremont and Bill Sienkiewicz as the artist. But they adapted it into the film as a horror film. It stars what's her face from Game of Thrones. Maisie Williams, thank you. So
Anya Taylor-Joy, too.
Anya Taylor-Joy is in it. So this could be a complete clusterfuck, but at the same time, this could also be
Charlie Heaton from Stranger Things.
Yep.
Alice Braga from City of God. But anyway, continue, Mike. Sorry.
But this might have been something that just got caught up in the Fox sale. And like I said, these are things I'm curious to see. Not necessarily things that I'm expecting to be especially good, but I am really curious at this point because there were going to be reshoots and then they decided not to do reshoots, or maybe they did the reshoots but ditched the reshoots. Whatever, it's now a Disney property, and so Disney's kind of dumping it in April, and we'll see if they put any money behind it. We'll see if the film is any good, or if it's as much of a mess as I think Dark Phoenix was, but we'll see. So I did want to mention that one.
Okay. Some details behind it. Director Josh Boone hasn't done really much, though he did a film called The Fault in Our Stars a few years back, starring Charlene Woodley. So that got some notice because she was a pretty big actress at that era a few years ago. She still could be kind of big, but she's kind of not as big as she was 4 or 5 years ago. And that film did pretty good, $42.6 million and 80% good reviews. So this was his next big film, and as we discussed, it looks like it's going to be a clusterfuck. However, he's going to be writing and directing a lot of the TV miniseries or show that's coming out, The Stand, because he is the showrunner for that. So he's going to have survive even after this mess.
The question is it is it a mess? This is when everybody's trying to play catch up with Disney and Marvel, right? And so here comes a superhero film that's a horror film, and they made and it may be that it is a total mess. It may just be that the studio was afraid of releasing the film as it was, because they were afraid of taking a chance with something that could have been which was something part of an established franchise, and doing something different with it. You know, there was a lot of hesitance to do a Deadpool film too. Sure. So I don't know. I could be pleasantly surprised. It's based off some stories I love from when I was a teenager. I'm really curious, but I'm just curious to see if they pulled it off or not, and how
now. Now that it's owned by Disney, because 20th Century Fox, which is now called 20th Century Studios.
Century Studios.
Before you were on, I already discussed.
Right.
Because there was a Searchlight picture that's coming out that we talked about, and that used to be called Fox Searchlight, and now it's just called Searchlight. So
right.
I already explained all that. But Marvel, they are putting also the Marvel Entertainment production company in the credits as well. So it'll say 20th Century Studios, then it'll show Marvel and so on and so forth. But it says the five young mutants just discovering their abilities while held in a secret facility against their will fight to escape their past sins and save themselves. And that's that. Anybody have thoughts on this one besides what Mike had to say?
Well, I know I am not much of a, a superhero movie or whatever person. I say that all the time. I do really like the X-Men. I've always enjoyed all the X-Men films, and they're one of the few superhero movies that I make sure that I see. But this just, you know, this trailer was out a while ago, right? A couple of years ago. Like, it just seems like it, like you guys said, it's been stuck in development hell or whatever. And this just, the trailer for this always appealed to me. I was like, you know, this just looks really interesting. It might not be great, but it looks dark enough and just like a little scary enough for me that I might be like, I think I'm going to probably go for it just because. I'll go see it just because it just looks, I don't know, it looks scary and dark, and that's what I like. So I think I'll go check it out.
All right. What about you, Abe?
Maybe. I said, I've been kind of cutting down my superhero films because beforehand it was just an oversaturation of it. But, I mean, this one looks a little different. That could be interesting. So we'll see.
All right. Very good. So that's The New Mutants, April 3rd. It's similar to Underwater that was released earlier this year, a film that was made like 3 years ago and finally being released. I have my last film or major film of the night where we'll discuss beside after in more detail compared to the list that we give off after. But this one is, and Chrissy will probably have interest in this one as well, but this is a July 24th, 2020 film called Jungle Cruise, starring The Rock and my favorite actress, Emily Blunt.
Oh, yeah, I'm so looking forward to this. Can't wait to see this.
Yeah, the trailer is already out. It basically is based on Disneyland's or Disney World's theme park ride, where a small riverboat takes a group of travelers through a jungle filled with dangerous animals and reptiles, but with a supernatural element. Now, I don't know how this film is going to play out. In other words, will it be a kiddie film or would it be more of a family adventure film, like, say, what was that movie that The Rock was in with the giant ape?
Jumanji? Rampage.
Rampage, yeah. So the question is it going to be more like Rampage or is it going to be more like Jumanji? And I'm not quite sure yet because I'm thinking it's going to be like somewhere in between, like a Pirates of the Caribbean type of thing. But
I didn't see that big a difference tonally between Rampage and Jumanji. The first one was more of a kid's film, the Robin Williams one, where the Rock film felt more like a family adventure film. And this is what it, right? They're doing this as they have a property. They want to make a movie out of it and get some more asses on the ride, you know? So,
yeah,
you know, that's what they're doing.
Well, and they're getting a hell of a good cast. Your two leads are two of the more popular folk out there. The Rock is like, everybody knows who The Rock is. And everybody, except maybe you, Mike, knows who Emily Blunt is, too. So
Bill Camp's a great lineup.
That's why I said that joke about you. But yeah, so it has a pretty damn good cast. And I like The Rock a lot, and I absolutely adore Emily Blunt. So I'm really looking forward to this. This is maybe Emily Blunt's year again, where she has a couple of big hits out, like she has had a couple of times in the past. The screenwriter is pretty interesting. The group, there's a handful of them. Michael Green is one of them, and he wrote Logan and Blade Runner 2049 and The Murder on the Orient Express. And unfortunately, he kind of helped write Alien Covenant. So we had three damn good ones out of four. Glenn Ficarra, who wrote Bad Santa and stuff. So that's good. He has some good success. Bad Santa was one of the better comedies I've seen. And
that was a funny one. I remember that one.
Yeah, sure was. John Requa is here as well, which participated in writing a film called Cats and Dogs, among a number of others. The director is Jaume Collet-Serra, Catalan director. He refuses to call himself Spanish. He calls himself Catalan, which is technically true because they did declare independence, even though it was not recognized. He has had mixed results in the past. He did House of Wax, which was his directorial debut, the one with Paris Hilton in it that got mixed to negative reviews. But then he went on to do The Orphan, which was an excellent film. He did Unknown, the Liam Neeson film was excellent. He did Nonstop, which was another great Liam Neeson film. He did Run All Night, which was another great Liam Neeson film. Then he did The Shallows, which we did as a film topic for Dark Discussions. And then he did another great Liam Neeson film called The Commuter. So he's done a lot of damn good films, especially action films. So it may have been a good choice that they threw him onto this film here, Jungle Cruise, because he's done a lot of damn good action films. And I'm sure Chrissy would agree he can write a good backstory and direct good backstory on characters as you felt with The Shallows, Chrissy. And he actually has a film in 2021 coming out called Black Adam, which is part of the DC universe. So any opinions on this film here? Anyone?
Has anybody else seen the trailer?
No.
I have seen it. I've seen the trailer.
No, I have not seen the actual trailer. I saw they had some like little promotional things out a while back that were just like kind of jokey. And I saw those, but no, I have not seen the trailer. So
what I like is that they are definitely acknowledging the ride.
Oh, yeah.
For anyone who has not been on the ride, one of the problems with the ride is that you now have an entire Disney theme park about exotic animals. And so it's a little anticlimactic to go on this ride with a fake hippo and a fake elephant. The real appeal for the ride is the bad jokes delivered by the drivers. You know, and they have a script, and then they've got multiple options that they have to memorize, so they don't necessarily always repeat the same jokes. But there's a lot of jokes. So the trailer, basically, The Rock is starting off as the Jungle Cruise tour guide, right, in the 1920s or 30s. You know, he's got pulls on a vine, and there's a fake hippo who pops out of the water. You know, he has the joke about, and now you're seeing the back of the waterfall. You know,
yes.
Lines like that. So there's little Easter eggs there, but then it's going to kind of go, you know, into more of a proper adventure after that. But I just kind of like the nods to the ride. And in a weird way, that might help salvaging the ride there, because that's been dead for years in terms of people going on it.
What, the Jungle Cruise?
Compared to what it used to be, there was always a huge line for that, and now it's a pretty easy walk up ride.
Oh, really? See, I've never Jungle Cruise. Every time I've been to Disney World in Florida, we always have trouble getting on that ride.
Oh,
there's
okay.
Always the line. So I think it just depends what time of day you go, because there have been times when there's like a 2-hour wait still. Like if you go in the middle of the afternoon, or, you know, that's why Nathan and I always hit it during the parade or something, then it's a walk up. But most of the people who do Jungle Cruise, I think anyway, a lot of the park fans who are huge fans of it, they do it because they know the bad jokes, you know? So you'll get like a whole boat full of park fans, and they'll just be like saying all the punchlines and you know what I mean? And all that stuff. So I think
ruining it for everybody.
Not really, because, you know, most people do know it. Do you know what I mean? It's pretty easy. And I think especially in today's internet world, because now there's video of every single ride through. You just got to go watch them.
The people going to the ride the first time probably haven't done that. Anyway,
that's true.
But that's neither good.
So back to the film. Any thoughts on the film? Anyone? Any further thoughts, I should say.
When is the release date for that, Phil?
I had it here. It is July 24th.
Perfect. Okay. I'm going to make sure that we're there, because
it could be possibly a Mystic Connecticut film. Who knows?
Oh my God, that would be so great.
I mean, I haven't seen a trailer, but that could be fun. It'd be very different from what we usually see.
Actually, that would be totally fun. Maybe we should do that this year. That would just be something different and fun. And I know Nathan wants to come this year, and he wouldn't miss a chance to see to do the Jungle Cruise.
Have we gotten word on from Eric as to when he's going to be available?
Not yet, but he's already been looking. No. He's already been looking at hotels. So he's not, but he hasn't given me the date range yet. So we'll try to get it from him. I'll make sure it's not the same weekend as Skiazakia, though. All right, so that was pretty much our main list, but there's dozens and dozens of other films.
Yeah, if I could just run just a couple that was on my list. There was one. It was called. There was a weird Spanish film called Platform, which is just an interesting concept. It's set in a prison, in a Spanish prison, but it's a weird, experimental. So it's clearly meant as a metaphor film, but there's a it's a vertical prison, right? So there's rooms underneath each other, two prisoners per room. And there's a hole in the floor and in the ceiling, and they lower a platform, and the platform has food on it. But if you're on one of the lower levels, the food you get is whatever food is left over from the people up above, right? So the platform drops, you got 2 minutes to eat what you want, and then it drops down to the next one. And I guess you don't have any idea, like, you know, how much is going to be left when it's coming, and you don't know how many people are below you, so you don't necessarily know, you know, how much food should you be leaving. And it pretty short structured as some sort of criticism on capitalism or something like that. But it, just as a concept, I just found it sort of an interesting idea. So there was that one. There was Come to Daddy, which is Elijah Wood. We saw, I think we posted the Dark Discussions group today asking, literally, is Nick Cage the new Vincent Price? But I think it's really asking, is he the new face of horror? Which I still don't know we've really had one since Robert Englund. And, you know, not that Robert Englund has stopped, but isn't making nearly as many movies as he used to. Elijah Wood's putting in a pretty good argument, because he produced
Maniac.
He produced Color Out of Space, I believe, you know, and so, you know, he's done a lot of genre work, because he's not getting work for anything else, and he seems to be a genre fan.
But he's more behind the scenes or minimal roles, like, rather than, say, Nicolas Cage. He's more like a Blumhouse.
He did Cooties. He's got this movie coming out, which is called Come to Daddy, which is basically about a kid seeking out his estranged father. And I just recommend watching the trailer. You know, it's hard to, because I don't know what happened, but it hits the what happens there, but things go wrong. It got great reviews on the festival circuit. So yep. I'd recommend that. Sure. I think one that, unless you mentioned it and I missed it on your list, was Invisible Man.
Yep. Directed by Lee Whannell. The guy that did Upgrade, which was the best film ever.
Right. And this is I said this when I first released the trailer. This is a reason why I like trailers, is because I'm not thrilled with the way they're going with the direction for this, which is, I think it's Elizabeth Moss from Mad Men and Handmaid's Tale, is basically being gaslit by the Invisible Man. I thought there were other ways to tackle the idea of Invisible Man than just as the invisible stalker, because we already kind of did that with Hollow Man.
It follows as well.
No, but that wasn't a psychological. There wasn't a guy stalking.
Right. You mean like an actual? Okay, yeah.
It's also written by Lee Whannell as well, so it's his film through and through, with Blumhouse producing it.
Right. So, I'll be kind of curious to see what that is. It's their attempt to salvage the Dark Universe that they abandoned after The Mummy did badly. So that was another one that was on my list. And I think that was the only major ones that I wanted to mention. Well, of course, there's lots and lots of little things.
I got a bunch of more here that I'll just list them out. I won't talk about them much. Obviously, The Grudge came out. Then
And we all went to see it, right?
I did not know.
No.
I did not either.
Poor Eric
did know. Yeah, that's
Eric did. Point. Not only did Eric do it, he went like on the second or third weekend, so he should have known better.
then we have Saw Organ Donor, which is the new entry into the Saw series, directed by Darren Lynn Bosman. Then we have The Last Night in Soho by Edgar Wright. I was surprised you didn't mention that one.
Because I don't know a lot about it. I wasn't really sure what to say. I'm definitely looking forward to it. I love Edgar Wright. He's almost got a perfect record for me.
Yep, fair enough. I agree. Halloween Kills, David Gordon Green, which is the follow-up to the Halloween film from last year, was it? And then we have St. Maud, which has been getting some buzz on the festival circuit. It's coming out. Then we have the following films here. We got Get Gone, I don't know too much about. Brahms, The Boy 2, which is based off the film you saw a couple of years ago, Chrissy, The Boy. This is with you know, the dummy.
Yeah, that was on my list, but we didn't get to it just because it was a sequel, and I didn't think many people were going to go for it, but I'll definitely go because I liked the first one. It'll just be tropey, but I'm cool with that. That's fine.
I'm just curious how they pull it off, right? Because that was a film they've done, and I think that there were a couple of films that pulled a similar trick when The Boy came out, without spoiling it, and I'm just curious how they. You know, I don't think they can pull the same trick again this time. So,
yeah, that was a big surprise. To move on, The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It. So the next film in the Conjuring series, then a film called Spell, which I don't know too much about. Purge 5, believe it or not, is coming out July 10th. So there's a new Purge film. Morbius, which is the Dr. Morbius film, coming out July 31st. Then we have a film called Dreamland coming out April 24th. Don't know too much about that. Deerskin coming out March 20th. Come to Daddy coming out February 7th.
I already mentioned that one, but that's okay.
Come to Daddy?
Yeah, that was it was the Elijah Wood movie.
Oh, right. Yeah, you mentioned it in passing. Sorry. Inmate Zero, which came out January 3rd to VOD, so that's out there. VHS, January 17th, so that's already out there. Get Gone, I mentioned, comes out tomorrow, most likely VOD. Color Out of Space, Chrissy already mentioned. And then there's a bunch of other stuff, science fiction and stuff that thrillers I haven't mentioned, but superhero stuff like The Black... Black Widow, is it? Yeah, Black Widow.
Black Widow, Eternals.
Yeah, I think Eternals, so forth. Ozark Season 3 comes out March 27th. Look for a Dark Discussions podcast episode that me and Eric recorded back 2 years ago that I've been saving for the release of Season 3, which we'll drop that episode right before Season 3. Westworld is coming out March 15th for Season 3. And look for Bullets, Brothels, and Bots, a Westworld podcast, when that comes. Anything else anybody wanted to mention? That's all I had. And Chris, you said you had some more films, or was just The Boy 2 the only other film you had?
I actually had Ghostbusters Afterlife written down.
Yep.
Yep, and I don't know if you, because you were running through that so fast, I might have missed it. There is one that's coming out on Netflix later in the year. Called I'm Thinking of Ending Things.
I saw something like that.
Yeah, and it looks interesting. It's got Toni Collette, which is very attractive, and it looks like it's a psychological thriller, and also David Thewlis is in it, and I love him too. But it's like about a woman who's re-examining her life as she's trying to break up with her boyfriend while they're on this road trip. I mean, it doesn't, I don't know. Something about that just appeals to me, and it's going to be on Netflix, so I'll check it out and see if it's any good. It's certainly not a very exciting description, but that's – I love road trip stuff, and if you have screwed up things going on between – you know, a couple that's about to break up on a road trip, that's even better for me. So that just might be a personal thing. But they're saying it's like a psychological thriller or like a dark drama. So I don't know that it would really count as horror.
Sure, sure. Well, we're doing genre stuff too. So we also have Green Arrow and the Canaries, Star Trek, Picard, some film that comes out this week on called Zombie Child. And that's pretty much it. What else I had here? So that's pretty much it. So, since we're already 2 hours and 28 minutes in, we'll probably just skip the what you've been watching and all the house cleaning and all that.
We don't need to really do that. We could do that next time.
But I can ask, everybody's their final opinions of 2020s and its future. We'll start with you, Abe. What do you think so far with 2020 and the films that are coming?
It could be an interesting year. There's some cool films that are coming out, but there's also some wild cards in the bunch. I mean, every year is always a toss up, but usually sometimes we have like a string of stronger titles and stuff like that. We got a couple of sequels. We got some new IPs and other things here and there, mid-series and such. But I don't know. I guess we'll just have to go take them as they come along and see how this year pans out in terms of quality.
All right, very good, Chrissy.
I am looking forward to this year. I think, compared to last year, there's actually more films this year that I'm excited about, rather than last year, where I seem to remember last year I was like scraping to try to find things I was really looking forward to. But this year, there's a lot I'm looking forward to, so I'm happy.
So we've already reviewed one of the films and chose not to review another of those films, which is, The Grudge, as we alluded to, has gotten horrible reviews. We just dropped the episode for Underwater. I just watched last night Color Out of Space, which I highly recommend. That'll be out on disc by the end of February. So I recommend either renting it when you can or grabbing the DVD and supporting it, because
upcoming DDP episode most likely.
Is it hopefully. Is it coming? Isn't it coming to theaters? It's supposed to open tomorrow.
Did a special preview last night at AMC theaters.
I have the full information. What happened was on Wednesday they did a special preview, as Mike said, at a lot of theaters. So they were even close to me, but then it disappeared, and then it goes to limited release for starting tonight and or basically Friday. And that happens to be less theaters than on Wednesday, but multiple showings at those less theaters. So, for example, there was one that was 7 miles away from both myself and Abe Wednesday night, but starting tonight and tomorrow, the closest one is 40 miles away in downtown Boston. So that's how it's being done, Mike and Chrissy.
I know there are, 5 or 6 AMC theaters within 2 hours of me, but none of the ones that were within an hour were showing it. So it was widespread, but not that widespread. I had to, make a trip to get there. It was clearly a special engagement because, Phil, you'd appreciate that. There were no commercials and no trailers in front of it.
Yep, that's good.
Well, it's good except for the people who walked into the movie 20 minutes late.
Sure.
Because they
and it's AMC theater, too. Yeah, that's a good point.
Right. And it also had, at the end, Patton Oswalt interviewed Nick Cage and the director, Richard...
Cooper, is it?
Stanley.
Stanley.
Richard Stanley.
you know, in front of a, I don't know if it was a live audience. It was live when they recorded it. I think it got a good reaction from the audience. I really enjoyed it. It was a little long in that I think the first act could have shaved down some time. But it's, I think it gets really interesting once this shit hits the fan about 30 minutes in. I highly recommend. But anyway, the point is, I'm really, as for the rest, you don't know, because it's franchises or franchises. The odds are they're going to disappoint you. It's always the new films that are usually the most exciting. The ones that you don't expect to be the best films often, you know, are ones that we haven't heard of yet. So.
Sure. Oddly, a lot of the films that we talked about tonight, not all of them, but probably about 90% of them, have been word of mouth and all over social media. But usually by the end of the year, we find out that most of the films that are on our best list aren't films that we even knew about or discussed on this episode. So what we did discuss, I'm very excited about 2020. But as always, I'm excited about the year just for the fact that there's a lot of films that I haven't heard of that will come up and surprise us all. Though I do have to say last year, 2019, was a fairly mediocre year all around, right from the beginning all the way to the end. So hopefully this year will be much better than last year, because I think 2019 may have been the worst year for genre that since we've done the podcast, but that's just my personal opinion. Not that there weren't some gems, just all in all. So I'm hoping 2020 will be a lot better. All right, so I guess we can wrap it up for tonight. So thanks for listening. And Chrissy, why don't you lead us out?
All right, thanks again for tuning into Dark Discussions this week to listen to us talk about all the exciting stuff we're looking forward to in 2020. If you come back next week, we will more than likely be talking about something else. So I hope, anyway, unless we are all struck dumb. And have a good week. Good night.
Wonder Woman, Wonder Woman,
all the world is waiting for you, and the power you possess, in your satin tights, fighting for your rights,
and the old red, white, and blue. Wonder Woman, Wonder Woman,
now the world is ready for you, and the wonders you can do, make a honking dove, stop a war with love,
take a liar, tell it true.